Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand. Okay, well, I have to start with my terrible weekend.
We hate to hear that, okay? First of all, let me just put this out here as just a Girl on the Gov rule is here, we want people to have good weekends. Good weeks, good days, good everything, but especially good weekends.
Good weekends.
So this is tragic. Especially.
Oh my God, hold on. While we record this, literally right below my apartment at the wine bar across the street that I'm looking at, one of the mayoral candidates is having a little get together. Hey.
Do you think that they heard that, like, Girl Think of the podcast records across the street from there and was like, oh my God, like, maybe this is my...
Like, is that him?
I take it to win it?
I don't know what he looks like. Anyways, so my weekend. I, on Saturday, was heading back from Netroots, which, by the way, I saw so many former guests at Netroots.
Stop.
Like Sarah Haig, like Vote Mama, TBT. I was like, we haven't talked to her in so long. But first of all, this is just so funny. Like, trust your gut, ladies, because always. The week before I was like checking my flights. Saturday was the last day of the conference. I was like, I don't think I'm gonna like go to all of the programming that day. Like, I should just change my flight to be a little earlier because I had it scheduled for like 5:30, which was so I could be there technically for the conference. I didn't know what my schedule is gonna be, if I was gonna even go to a lot of panels, and I ended up not. So I was like, I should have just changed my flight. I would have had to like pay $100, or my company would have. But anyways, it's just foreshadowing to, you know, my night. So I get to the airport, I'm at my gate, and all of a sudden the power goes out at this terminal. And I'm like,
no,
this is weird and scary.
Freaky.
Yeah. And right when this happens, Donald Trump gets shot. And so simultaneously, like, my phone is blowing up, like, with work stuff, just like, what do we do? What do we say? And then just the scariness of, like, what it meant for the election. Like, everything was raining down on me at once. And then on top of it, like, I was dealing with United's terrible customer service, like, trying to figure out if I was going to make my connecting flight in Chicago because of these delays that were happening from the power outage. So it was just, like, absolute madness. And my flight finally takes off. It's delayed that I'm, like, I'm probably not going to make this connecting flight. But, like, the whole flight, I was, like, so stressed for, like, I'm going to miss my flight, like, just the flight drama stress on top of, like, what the fuck did we just lose this election? Like, everything was just, I was feeling everything. And so I end up getting to Chicago, run across the airport, because, of course, my gate was on the opposite side of the airport.
Oh, of course.
My connecting flight. So sprinting, I was absolutely gassed. I'm like, who? She's not fit. She thought she was fit. She's not. And I get to my gate to see the gate closed, not a United agent in sight to help the like six passengers who were trying to get on that flight to either get us on or rebook us, because the plane hadn't left yet. I was literally like this, like on the window, like, let me in, please. Like, I don't even want to get into all of the details of the absolute horrendous travel experience I had on United Airlines. It was their fault, everything except for the power outage, everything after that. Oh my God. I didn't get home. Like, I basically was supposed to get home Saturday night. I didn't get home till Sunday night. It was just absolute
Did you sleep
madness.
In an airport? Like, what?
No, I have done that. I did that last year because of a similar situation with United. So they're on my fucking shit list, Samantha. You should see the email I sent them.
I'll have
to send it to you.
I love mean Maddie. I don't think you guys understand when you, like, it takes a lot to piss Maddie off. Like, a lot.
A lot.
Once you cross that line,
yeah, it's done.
Pray to whatever God you believe in, and like,
yeah,
say 10 Hail Marys. Yep.
Yeah, you're cooked. And anyways, I just dealt with seriously the most stressful day on Sunday, and then like still all the Trump stuff was like taking off, and I was like kind of simultaneously working and like with customer service and just like, oh my God, it was crazy. But yeah, I'll have to send you the email I sent because it was very long and ultimately connected back to an important message around corporate greed. I did bring up in the email the $37 billion United makes in profit annually. And I just wanted to make that important point of like, you can't treat people like this. You can't treat your staff like this because your staff then treats the people like shit. And it was just like this whole corporate greed message I'm really proud of. So there it is.
Well, here's what I can give you about United, because I took a United flight this morning, which chaos, because literally before I got to the United portion of this, I was dubbed the person in security that was going to be the line holder, essentially like them measuring how long it was going to take me to get through security. And then they kept bumping me lines. So then I get to this guy and he's literally chatting with every single person that he's like doing the tickets for. Tries to have this whole thing with me, like, Cantors, like, oh my God, your last name, can you sing? Like,
I don't have time.
I was like, stop, a little less yabber yabber, a little more scanny. Like, I could not. Like, I literally barely made the flight, like barely. And I'm like, incredibly like early about things. But where I would say I have to give compliments to the chef in terms of United and in reverse here is gossip that I was eavesdropping on of the flight attendants, because I had the last seat on the plane all the way in the back. Okay.
Don't give United the credit for that.
Oh no. But like, I'm sorry. Like, thank you to whoever these flight attendants were. You gave me so much entertainment. Whoever it is out there that has a sister-in-law that's really a fiance-in-law that got an aquamarine ring instead of a diamond and matching set, I support you fully. Just know, like, I'm on your team and you're right in the situation.
She's going to really appreciate that shout out on Girl in the Open podcast.
It's pretty big. It's a pretty big deal. But yours takes the cake. I think that is just
penosities. Yeah, and I seriously had a similar situation last year. And it's also not to come for the East Coast, but the weather, like, it's just, back. I don't get you how you do back. It. I just don't get how you do it, how you function. First of all, the heat and the humidity, like, I wanted to die the whole week I was in Baltimore. And then just like especially in the summer, the unexpected random storms and shit that just like ruin everyone's day and especially travel. This happened to me last year. I actually had to sleep in the airport last year because of United. And yeah, it's just like, I fucking hate them.
You know who I think you should actually take this up with? Our beloved PDB.
PDB, I know. Yes, for sure. And Joe Biden, who is coming for corporations and drunk fees and all that stuff, which we absolutely love. Yeah, you know what, too? Like, all the people who are disgruntled around me, like, the way I was pushing the corporate greed message, I was like, these greedy corporations, like, just people need to know. Like, you know, like that.
Were you camp counseling this whole thing?
Well, so this girl was complaining. She was complaining. She's like, also just like StubHub, I'm dealing with like some bullshit with their customer service. I'm like, these greedy corporations. And you know what? You know who loves corporations and big money? The right and Donald Trump. So like, it's just an important message to push. And like, I'm on the ground pushing it. I'm on the ground. I'm in the trenches pushing through this message of corporate greed that's so important, especially in an election year.
But you know what I think is like, so connected to what you're saying there is like that relational organizing and like that moment where you like really are bonding with other people, whether it's like random people that you're like stuck in a flight situation with, or it's like your friends and fam that you have like a very like close relationship with. Because this past weekend, post Trump assassination attempt, which obviously condemn all political violence, yada, yada, yada. Like, here's our stump speech on that. But so many people were like, oh, fuck, the election's over, throwing in. And I was like, literally.
And honestly, that was me that night because of the stress I was on. I think it was just like, I was not myself. Like, I was not, my right head was not on. And I was stressed. And I was like, fuck, like, we're done. We're cooked. And everyone was saying that. I'm like, fuck. I slept on it. I calmed down. I came home. I slept in my bed. I had a meal. And then I'm like, okay, now we're totally fine, you guys. Everything's fine.
No, literally. And this was, I think, honestly, blessing. And this goes to show everyone needs to touch more grass. I had a weekend, honestly, quite the weekend of vendors, and really was barely on social media at all, like whatsoever. Like, literally found out about like the Trump situation from a Citizen app, like notification. Like, literally, that's like one of my friends came to our rooftop and was like, oh, like, did you see, like, because they expected me to know. And I was like, I haven't looked at my phone in like 3 hours. Like, what happened? Anyways,
long story short, I literally was like, everybody needs to get a grip. Like, I need to breathe in, breathe out. Like, we're going to be okay. Like, this is horrible. That shouldn't happen. All of the things. But like, everyone panicking and just giving up and saying, oh, no, when you have the agency to vote and actually show out and have conversations with friends and family to encourage them and talk about all the accomplishments of the Biden administration just makes me so annoyed. And it is totally possible to be having these conversations. And even if you don't feel enthused, maybe you still feel doubtful. Who cares? Like, I literally, like, every little man and their little sports team that they go, wee, 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 like, they haven't won in 30 fucking years. You still turn out. You still buy all the jerseys. You still, like, buy into all the Michigas. Like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the difference? This time
don't
it's just
a bandwagoner. Don't be there for people when things are going good. We have to push, guys. We have to fight. Yeah. I saw a funny TikTok I honestly want to pull up because the sound just, like, gave me so much life. And let me do it. Let me pull it up.
Okay.
Y'all was on here accepting defeat after the incident happened. Like, oh, it's over. He won. He's going to be the next. Like, no. The fuck? Like, girl, where is your fight? Where is your dog?
Where is your dog? That's why I just.
Literally.
Yeah, that's just like. Listen, I was under distress on Saturday. That's what I have an excuse. Everyone else, seriously, what the fuck's wrong with you for thinking that it was over after that? And if anything, I feel like this shows more what is at stake. Like, this is the man. He created this environment for himself. Yeah. Okay? He created the most divisive political climate in our nation's history, potentially. I know we did have a civil war at one point, but... Anyways,
that little moment.
No, like, he did this. And yeah. Again, not condoning it by any means. But dude, like, this is a visual example of what America can be. Violence, divisive, just scary. I can't. And we have to defeat him once and for all. This is it. This is our moment. This is our time to shine. And we can do it.
Yeah. And now we've got J.D. Vance as VP, who literally once compared Trump to Hitler. So, like, his own words are coming back to bite him, and I fucking love it. So, like, thank you so much for being on record being a wackadoodle. But, like, literally, it's a double wackadoodle sandwich. That's what we're working with versus literally, okay, dude's a little old but does good policy and absolutely slam dunk, K-Hive, slay, love.
And we have a VP that's incredible and will absolutely wipe J.D. Vance's ass on the floor.
Boom.
Okay. So be excited. We have things to be excited about. We have opponents who we should be so fucking excited to defeat. And that should be motivating and exciting and fire you up as if you are literally going into a huge Super Bowl game against your team you hate the most, the biggest rivalry. Like, that's the energy. Fucking fire it up. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I actually... love this. I think we need to, occasionally we are a sports podcast. I think going from now to election, we are a sports analogy podcast.
Yeah.
Consistently. Like, guys, like, let's get our jerseys on. We're getting, like, the Gatorade. You already know that Maddie does grape, which is psychopathic, but that's okay. We will figure it out, okay? We are getting off the sidelines, and we're fucking talking to people, and we're making this shit happen because we got to win this. There is no other way. Yeah. And you got to do hard shit.
Name your sports rivalry. It's that times 12. That's what we have to train. We're training. We're mobilizing. We're team bonding. We're doing all of the things we need to win. And the countdown's on. And it should be an exciting process and journey. Let's do it.
A journey. A hashtag journey.
Yeah.
No, but seriously.
Well, let's get into this episode. Shall we?
Let's do it. Let's fucking do it. So, speaking of election this year and just... all the Michigas, you guys know I can't stop saying it, but I really, it's this week.
She'll never stop.
No, I really, you know, if there's a phrase out there that's just like fun to roll off the tongue, it's or not make sense, it's going to happen here at Girl on the Gov, specifically with me. Maddie stays on the straight and narrow with the phrases. But anyways, we are talking to a Senate candidate from, drumroll please, Florida. She's running against Rick Scott, and her name is Debbie McCarcel Powell. She's from Congresswoman. And like we said, running for U.S. Senate against Rick Scott in Florida. So we talked to her all about what that is like, what's at stake, like also just the demographics of Florida politically, like the turnout, the party infrastructure, like all these different things. So we got into it all. So without further ado, Here is Debbie.
Hi, I'm Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesac and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Imagine learning from the best without the years of struggle. On my podcast, I sit down with stars like Montel Jordan and Sarah Blakely to share the hard-earned lessons that can save you time and effort on your path to success. Ready to speed up your success story? Listen to Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson wherever you get your podcasts.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
We are getting into one of the spiciest Senate races that we need to talk about, obviously. And you are the Democratic candidate. Can you talk about what made you decide, I'm jumping in, this is the race to be in, why now?
Sammy, I love that intro, the spiciest race. finally, someone realizes this is the spiciest race nationally. No, look, I've been living here in Florida for so long, and what we've been facing have been attacks on our freedoms for too long. We really have been ground zero for all of those attacks, attacks against our democracy, attacks against our education system, attacks against our children, against women, telling us what we can or cannot do with our own bodies. And we have a huge affordability crisis that we're facing. So I've been traveling the state now for quite some time, and families all over the state, whether I'm talking to students at FAMU in the northern part of the state or seniors in Orlando, it's the same thing. People can't afford to live here. And so we need someone in the Senate that's going to put the interests of our families above anything else, above politics. And we have right now in the Senate, the worst senator, someone that oversaw the largest Medicare fraud in the history of this country. He took $64 million of that Senate seat, of that money, to buy his Senate seat, and he could care less about the struggles that we're facing here. He has no idea what it's like for people like my mom who have to live on that fixed social security check, or for those young adults that can't even move out of their homes because they can't afford to pay for their rent in their apartments. And so I'm running because those opportunities are disappearing. And because of those opportunities, I'm right now talking to you as the Senate candidate running against Scott for the U.S. Senate. I came here when I was 14. My mom brought me here at a very young age. She worked 12-hour shifts, two jobs to make ends meet. I started working at the age of 15 at a minimum wage job. And this is an incredible country, a country that has always given those opportunities, regardless of race, regardless of background, that if you work hard enough and you have people behind you, anything is possible. And that's why I'm running. I want to make sure that everyone in the state realizes their potential, that they know what is possible if we come together, and reminding them that when we come out, when we vote, we can win these races. And I've been feeling that energy all across Florida.
Yeah, well, that leads me to such a specific question, which is like, what is that energy? Because I feel like for so long, everyone, at least especially the national media, has had the lens on Florida. Like, Florida's going to flip blue. It's going to go crazy. Like, this is the state to watch. And then with some of those sort of falling short moments, I feel like with voters, it's made them potentially like, okay, well, maybe we can't do it, so why show out, you know? So I'm curious, like, what the change has been like on, you know, on the ground this time around, and just what you're starting to say.
Yeah. And, you know, Sammy, people forget very quickly, right? In 2018, we had incredible wins here in the state of Florida. We didn't win every race. Rick Scott won in 2018, barely, with only 10,000 votes. But I won my congressional seat. This was a seat that had a very popular two-term Republican incumbent. I didn't come from politics before that. I had been working at FIU at the medical school, but I was working to expand access to healthcare. And the Republican at the time was trying to take away the ACA. And so that's what prompted me to run. I wanted to stand up for my community. No one thought I could beat this guy I did. I beat him by 2 points. We also won another congressional seat that year. We won statewide. Nikki Fried, who's now the chair of the party, she won her seat, statewide agricultural commissioner, which is a very, very important seat here in Florida and part of the overall cabinet. So let's not forget what just happened a few years ago, right? I mean, people seem to forget what is possible here in Florida. Then we hit COVID. People were very much isolated. It was a very difficult and strange election in 2020. And in 2022, we had zero investments. That's what happens when no one invests in the state, when no one invests in communicating directly to voters and getting our voters to turn out. It was a very difficult year. DeSantis was still very popular because one of the things that he did is open up the economy very quickly. And that's what people wanted and needed here because our economy is based on tourism, right? And there was that need for us to get back on track. He did it sooner than most states. And that was popular for him at the time. So he was still enjoying that popularity in 2022. We had zero investments, no party infrastructure. No one came out to vote. And that's what happened. What's happening now is we have a very important amendment on the ballot to protect abortion rights. Florida passed the most extreme ban on abortion with hardly any exceptions to rape and incest, which we're now living under. It was put into effect on May 1st. But we also have now the opportunity to come out and protect abortion rights, make sure that we enshrine those rights into the state constitution. But what I'm saying to everyone is, look, it's not going to mean anything if we pass Amendment 4 and then Rick Scott gets reelected, goes back into the Senate, and he wants to be Senate Majority Leader and then pushes for a national abortion ban. The amendment measure needs 60% of the vote. Every poll that I've seen has us at 62, 63%. That's who we are in Florida. Those are our values. I only need 50 plus one. Tell me I can't win this race in November.
Mm-hmm. Love that. What are the general vibes around the incumbent and your current opponent amongst the electorate in Florida?
Yeah, Maddie, everywhere I've gone, I mean, I've been talking to people from across party lines, Republicans, Independents, Democrats. No one trusts Rick Scott. They know that he's a fraud. They know that he, when he was CEO of HCA, that healthcare company, Columbia HCA, he oversaw the largest Medicare fraud in the history of this country. They had to pay out $1.7 billion, the largest Medicare fraud that we have ever seen here in the United States. That's who he is. People in Florida have realized that not only is he a fraud, but he also has been using that Senate seat for self-enrichment. They know that he wrote a plan that would eliminate Medicare and Social Security, that would raise taxes on middle-class families, that would take away funding for the Department of Education. I mean, this is a man that's extremely dangerous. I want the entire country to pay attention to who he is. He can't go under the radar. And this is the opportunity for us to once and for all vote him out. People are excited about my candidacy. My story is the story of so many people across the state that with hard work and through those opportunities, they've been able to come here to the state and thrive. And all of a sudden they're seeing that these failed policies are choking them from those opportunities, right? So they're excited to see that there's someone that has a really, really strong chance. I'm going to be the first Latina Democrat to ever be on the top of the ticket. And I'm going to be the only Latina running at the top of the tickets nationwide. That's a huge, huge win for women, Latina women across our country. But I can't believe that it's 2024 and it's taken this long for us to be able to nominate somebody like myself with the background that I have. I was the first person that was elected to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives as a South American immigrant. I don't want to be the first. I don't want to be the last. I feel the same way about the Senate. I think that we need to continue to work to pave the way for young women that want to, that are have their eye on getting into politics, that want to serve, that want to be in public service. And we have a lot of responsibilities to do that. So I think that people are excited. I am a woman who will absolutely put women's rights above anything else. I have two daughters. I have a son. This is also a very important issue. I don't want to have my daughters living in a state where now they are living with less rights than what I've lived under here in this country. And so much is at stake. And in Florida, the uniqueness of the political landscape here is that, you know, people have been feeling those attacks, for the past few years, and we are done with extremism, and they don't represent our values. Don't for a second think just because Donald Trump, you know, moved his residency here, all of a sudden it's a state that is fully behind Donald Trump. I have talked to Republicans many times and many Republicans across the state that will not support what is going on right now in the Republican Party, that will not vote for Donald Trump. Independents are coming out significantly to vote for Democrats. We saw it in Orlando. We flipped a seat. It was a Republican held seat by 11 points and he flipped it. That those are the stories that are not being told right now nationally. And I'm just so grateful that you are both paying attention to this to tell our story.
Totally. And I do think like the communication party-wise has gotten so much better in state. At least that's like what it seems like coming from the outside perspective. But I'm so curious about the very specific issues affecting Floridians, like the affordability crisis, which really is hitting, honestly, all states in various capacities. But Florida's is unique, especially when we think about insurance companies and all of the climate change related storms and whatnot. And so I'm curious what you've heard from voters and also what your approach is for trying to make the state more affordable and, you know, livable for years to come.
Yeah, because this is a top of mind issue and it really is affecting everyone. And it's all I hear when I talk to Floridians. The first policy paper that we've released, and we did it a couple of months ago already, is an affordability plan. And we can reduce the rates of property insurance here in the state of Florida at the federal level. People realize that this is a statewide issue, that it's come from extreme Republicans. It actually started under Rick Scott. He took tens of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from insurance companies, then took $50 million from the public option and gave it to his campaign donors and his friends. And so this crisis started under his leadership when he was here as governor. There's a bill right now in the House, Sammy, that we can introduce in the Senate that would lower property insurance rates by 25%. That's significant for people here living in the state of Florida. I would love to be able to lead that bill and make sure that we pass it. I've already talked to some senators about that. So that is possible and it's a possibility. But we need to invest in resiliency, right? We have communities here all over the state. They're coastal communities with many, many small businesses, which are really an economic engine for our economy in the state. And we are entering a summer where we're already getting ready for some very severe weather and severe storms. Yet we have not investing, we haven't invested in resiliency. And Rick Scott voted against billions of dollars that would bring that funding down to the state. And that also affects property insurance rates. So that's something else that's included in my plan. We also need to make sure that we bring good paying jobs to our state. Unfortunately, a lot of people your age are leaving Florida because they can't find a good paying job. There are other opportunities for them to leave. Well, we can bring jobs by investing in solar energy. We need to make sure that we attract more tech companies to come and bring their innovation here to the state of Florida. There are a lot of things that we can do. Unfortunately, our leaders could care less, right? I mean, the politicos that have been in office like Rick Scott for 14 years, they could care less about young adults and their future. They just want to continue to use that seat for self-enrichment. And so that's the change. And that's the difference that I can make by being elected here in November.
Mm-hmm. What part of Florida are you from?
I live in Miami. Okay. Where a lot is happening down in Miami. It's an incredible area.
Yeah. What are your favorite parts of not only Miami, but greater Florida?
You know, I've been going to the Florida Keys for years and years and years. And when my kids were babies, we would go to the Florida Keys. We continue to do that. My sister now has a house. We're really lucky that she finally got a house in the Keys. And so it's my favorite spot. The minute I start driving down US 1 and I see water on both sides on our drive, I mean, there's so many interesting places to visit in the Keys. You can have really incredible food all over. There are some great, great restaurants. There are great places for people to stay. You can go kayaking, you can go boating, you can go fishing. There are beautiful parks with great beaches. It's an incredible place. And only in the United States, the only living coral reefs are along the Florida Keys. And I'm a huge coral reef lover. I did a lot of work with Coral Restoration Foundation. And actually, you should check out my ad that I did in 2018. It was a scuba diving ad, because our reefs are really facing some serious threats with more warming of the oceans. And I actually, with a Republican, passed a bill to protect our coral reefs when I was in Congress. So it has a very special place in my heart. I represented the Keys when I was in Congress, and we go there as often as we can with the kids.
Yeah. Do you have a go-to hobby that you like to do in the Miami area? Do you scuba dive? Like, what is your go-to favorite activity?
So I do scuba dive, but I don't do it often enough. I love going out boating with my brother-in-law. He has a boat, thank goodness, and swimming. But my hobbies are usually when I have time, by the way, because recently I haven't had time, but
sure.
Running, you know, you can go for a run anywhere you are. You can just put your tennis shoes on and go out for 15 minutes, 30 minutes and get a good run in. And, you know, walking the dog whenever I can, that's always really fun. I had two dogs. I lost Spike about a month ago. It was an Airedale, and that's been really tough on all of us because he was with me for so long. Now we have a Husky who keeps us really busy. And we have a bunny too, by the way. My daughter has a little
obsessed
bunny. Ashanti should have her own Insta Reel account. She's funny.
Absolutely. That needs to happen. I have to say, politics and pets are always like the perfect combination. They bring mm-hmm. people in like ways you wouldn't expect. So just maybe it needs to happen this campaign. I'm just thinking.
Yeah, right.
Mascot. Campaign for mascot. Sure.
Absolutely need a campaign mascot. And, you know, sort of with thinking of that, if there were a celebrity that you could do a piece of legislation with, you know, in the sense of they're, you know, sort of like the mouthpiece for it and like have some tie-in and, you know, you're able to obviously, you know, make that happen from a legislative perspective, who would that be? Like, what celebrity would you dream of working with?
Oh God. Oh my God. I mean, there are so many, right? I mean, I would love to, the first piece of legislation that I would love to pass is the Voting Rights Act. The John Lewis Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
And I would love to work with both Michelle Obama and Oprah Winfrey to get that to happen. Mm-hmm. Because Oprah Winfrey brings a lot of resources to the table and she can really galvanize everyone to support that. But really, the first thought that came to my mind also was Leonardo DiCaprio, because he's been so strong on the environment and the environment is so important for us here in Florida. And he's been a really strong voice. And so for us to pass another package that would invest in resiliency, that would invest in making sure that companies lower carbon emissions, green energy investments. And I would love to use his voice on that.
Yes. Love that. Love Leo. Leo's a good one. And Leo's a good one. Definitely brings the energy for climate
politics. I don't know if he gets too political. I mean, he's been a strong voice there, but
yeah, I feel like he definitely leans more like advocacy, like issue based. I don't know that he's done many endorsements, but yeah, I think his efforts around climate have been definitely duly noted and would be a great person to bring in. And the thing is like some of that stuff, especially when it comes to resiliency and, you know, extreme weather is something we're seeing across the country, not just in Florida. And we need resiliency plans across the country in all these different states. So hopefully there would be bipartisan support for something like that, that maybe Leo would come in on, given that it's like, wouldn't it be too political if it's bipartisan, which it should be. Yeah. But
and it's really going to affect our economy. I mean, people talk about, you know, jobs, the economy, growth. Well, there won't be any growth if you can't invest in areas where the impact of these weather events are destroying these communities. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's not just Florida. We're seeing it with flooding across Texas. We're seeing it with the fires in California. I mean, this is a serious issue and we really have no time to waste.
Yeah. Totally. And the insurance piece is so, it resonates with so many people. I mean, even in California, it's like you live in a fire zone and insurance won't cover you. They're like, fire insurance doesn't cover you. It's like, what? I live in a fire zone. Like, don't I need insurance for that?
It's all about money, right? They want to make sure that they're not losing money when they cover high-risk properties. That's what it is.
Yeah. And I think it's like everything now is like a high-risk property, you know? Like, whether it's flooding or it's like wind and tornadoes in place. Like New Hampshire had like a tornado warning the other day, like New Hampshire, like mountains. Yes. So it's just, it's so, you know, it's every state and every sort of situation. And so you're like, okay, well then who can even have insurance? What's the point? So maybe they'll even put themselves out of business. I don't know.
Yesterday, my in-laws, they're in Oregon. And they're like, oh my God, it's so hot. We're going to face 103 degree weather. It's so hot. I'm like, oh, maybe you should come to Miami because it's been pretty breezy and nice. It's like 89 degrees in Miami. I mean, it's not making sense. It's not making sense. There are these changes happening all across the globe. And we're seeing the impact, right? We're really seeing the impact of a warmer climate. Of course, Republicans like Scott want to ban the term climate change. They don't want to talk about it. I don't know if you guys saw the latest that textbooks that the DeSantis administration is asking textbooks to take out any reference to climate change in scientific textbooks here in the state of Florida. And so I tell people, we are 20 million Americans living in Florida. You're going to just disregard Florida. If you care about the environment, if you care about climate change, you need to invest in Florida.
For sure. Yeah. And I'm like so curious. I mean, this is a whole wheelhouse that we could really dive into with their attacks on education and textbooks and learning and just actual facts, science, all the things. But like with something like climate change, or you know, part of our conversation earlier, it's an economic issue. And I feel like typically you think of like Republicans, the economy, like just on the base, they're like, oh, you know, putting money into the economy. So you would think being the operative word, that therefore talking about climate change and then the investments you would make as a result would be a good argument for them to have. So I'm curious, like from talking with maybe even voters that happen to lean that way, what is like the rationale? Is there a rationale? It behooves me.
You know, it's so funny, Sammy, because the politicos, the old establishment, the extremists, the people that we shouldn't have in office are the ones that are trying to control the messaging. But in reality, a lot of Republican business owners understand that they need to do something to lower carbon emissions. They understand that we need to transition to green energy. I mean, look at the amount of electric vehicles that we're now manufacturing. And we need to make sure that, you know, these electric vehicles have the infrastructure ready for them, which is why those investments from that infrastructure bill are so crucial that people are not seeing yet. But we're going to have those charging stations increase all across the country. Those are the type of things that we need to move to. But companies and business owners understand this. They really do see it. The agricultural industry all over the country, I think, has realized that they need to control any sort of pollution and runoff in what they're using in their farms, because it's polluting the water. And then if the water is polluted, it goes down to the ocean. If the ocean sees high levels of pollution, it will affect tourism. It will affect the fisheries. Everything is connected. And here in the state of Florida, it's not a tough conversation to have. Most people understand that it's an issue that we need to continue to work on. There's this organization called Vote Water. So it's not Republican, it's not Democrat, it's Vote Water. And they endorsed me back in 2018 and 2020. And they're already talking to their members that Rick Scott has been the worst person as it relates to our climate and our environment. Why? Because he's making money off of big oil. I mean, that's the reality. They are completely linked to these special interests that prevent the country from moving forward. And we should be in the forefront of addressing these challenges, especially in the Sunshine State. We should have more solar panels than other places in the country, yet we do not, because we are giving favors to those special interests. And so we're falling behind in the United States. There are other countries that are doing much more as it pertains to climate and green energy and transitioning to green energy. We need to be the leaders. We need to do more innovation. We need to do more investments. And that will create great paying jobs for your generation. That's what we need to be talking about and focusing on.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap, I want to give you kind of a closing note in terms of like why people need to continue to pay attention, not only to your race, but to Florida politics and how people can find you and stay in touch and help out.
Yeah. What's happening here is unique. I think it's very different from the rest of the country, like I said, because we have been under attack for so long that people are ready for change and they're really organizing. That organization came when we were able to get signatures to put this ballot amendment on the November ballot, which would protect reproductive freedom. And that infrastructure is on the ground, ready to go, ready to turn our voters out. This is the year that we can show the country who we truly are as Floridians. And like I said, we're a diverse state. We don't like government interfering in our freedoms. And I think that's the change maker in this election. And for everyone watching, I need you with me. I need your support, your contributions, your time, your energy. Go to debbieforflorida.com. Also follow me. I'm on all sorts of social media, including TikTok. And from what I hear, I'm doing pretty well on TikTok, everybody. So at Debbie4FL is my handle and all my social media accounts and Instagram. And we're also starting with YouTube Shorts. So I would love to have your input on that. If you have any ideas on shows that we should be creating, let me know, because we have a great team here on the ground getting ready for that. And look, this is an important race. The Senate majority runs through Florida. We have to keep the Senate majority to hold the line regardless of what happens at the top of the ticket. I keep saying that. The Senate is in charge of nominating and designating Supreme Court justices. And we are now seeing the danger of having a court that is completely politicized and is beholden to special interests. And that is also why the Senate is so important in this election. We need to keep the Senate majority. So I hope that you're with me. I hope you come down. We have an incredible state. I can put you on the ground and you're going to have fun while you're doing it. But this is a state that's going to make it happen for America.
Amen to that. Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.